Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 14th of April. Communities of color are disproportionately burdened by environmental hazards, toxic air, water pollution, lead, pesticide exposure, and the effects of climate-related disasters. The health problems associated with environmental racism are substantial. Asthma, ADHD, deaths from heart failure, lead in the blood. Our guest this hour is a University of Notre Dame biologist and philosopher of science, Dr. Kristen Schrade-Frechette, who's been researching and taking action to combat environmental racism for many years. She was in Milwaukee recently speaking at Marquette University as part of their Distinguished Peacemaker series. This became an issue that the country took notice of way back in 1982 in Warren County, North Carolina, a poor, rural, and overwhelmingly black community. The state government decided that the county would be the home for 6,000 truckloads of soil laced with toxic PCBs. The state dismissed concerns over those PCBs leaching into drinking water supplies. People who lived in Afton in Warren County met those trucks, stopped them, lying down on the roads leading into the landfill, and more than 500 people were arrested, the first arrest in U.S. history over the siting of a landfill. Environmental problems on the other side of the tracks this hour of the program, and we're delighted to have Dr. Kristen Schrade-Frechette with us, biologist, philosopher of science. She has been at University of California, University of Florida, and is now the O'Neill Family Professor in the Department of Biological Sciences and Department of Philosophy at the University of Notre Dame. She directs the Center for Environmental Justice and Children's Health. She has won many awards for her work. She has written all kinds of articles and 17 books, and she has spoken all over the world. She's been invited to address the National Academies of Science in three countries, advisor to many governments and international organizations, including the UN and the World Health Organization. And we're delighted to have you with us, Dr. Kristen Schrade-Frechette. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
It was interesting in reading the history of this that this sit-down took place so many years ago, and yet environmental racism continues all over the country. It's taking a long time for this to achieve, other than what we've witnessed in Flint, Michigan, national attention.
Yes, it is taking a long time, but that's because most of the money is on one side of the fight, and most of the victims are on the other side of the fight. I mean, consider what happened with tobacco. It took us more than 50 years to regulate tobacco, and the science was clear. It's just that the money wasn't where the science was.
Yes. African Americans, let's talk about some of these statistics. Three times more likely than whites to be hospitalized or die from asthma. Latino children twice as likely to have unsafe levels of lead in their blood. There are 7,000 unnecessary deaths from heart failure because of disparities in nitrogen dioxide. And I'm just listing a few of the health consequences of being in areas that environmentally are in really bad shape.
That's exactly right. If you grow up through no fault of your own, being a child of color, you're far more likely to die, you know, 5 to 10 years earlier. You're far more likely to have Alzheimer's, dementia, asthma, cancer, developmental disorders. So we're really seeing in this country, you have to be rich in order to breathe clean air, and yet the air is our commons, our common property. So it shouldn't be just the rich who have clean air.
How are these decisions made to put landfills, to put, you know, questionable factories that are emitting bad kinds of chemicals? How are the decisions made, at a local level or a state level?
Well, they're often made at a local level, and one solution to environmental justice problems will be to get a federal law, because what happens is that some of the worst polluters typically seek to put their sites in a community that has neither the money nor the expertise to fight them. They choose the most vulnerable communities that they can because, again, they don't want anybody to fight them. And then once these facilities are in place, the problem is compounded, because the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's funding has been going down in constant dollars. So there aren't dollars to enforce what environmental laws we have. So communities of color and poor communities are targeted by industry because they don't want to fight lawsuits from citizens. And then secondly, the federal government doesn't enforce the laws we have.
Mm-hmm. And are there certain kinds of areas, landfills or factories, that are most problematic?
Yes, there are. For example, if you happen to be a person of color, I can tell you right now that you're going to be two or three times more likely to live near a toxic waste dump. If you're a person of color, you're going to be, you know, far more likely to live in an area that violates all the current air pollution regulations. For example, double to triple the number of people of color, the percentages of people of color, live in areas that violate all our air quality standards. So in other words, communities are targeted, and then the federal government doesn't enforce the law because Congress has stripped the EPA of much of the money that it needs to help us all out.
Mm-hmm. There was an interesting, I'm sure you saw this, article in Newsweek late in March that looked at Michigan and the coal-fired power plants at River Rouge. 2011 ranked the ninth worst power plant in the country for health outcomes. The Department of Environmental Quality, which has its set of problems with Flint and other places, said that the lead was allowed to remain. They were working on the issue. They were trying to get them to reduce their emissions. But here we are quite a few years later, and the problem still persists.
Well, that's exactly right. And the problem persists partly because we used to have the lead in clean technology, energy technology. We led in solar, and we led in wind, which is far, far cheaper than any other existing technology once you count the health cost of our energy technologies. We lost the lead in global clean energy to places like China because we elected people, both to the presidency and to the Congress, who just gave a lot of money to dirty 19th century technologies that are still killing us. So it's a little crazy.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of action is taking place? I mentioned that county in Warren, North Carolina, many years ago. Is there a lot of grassroots action saying we don't want this anymore and we're prepared to do what we have to get it changed?
There is some grassroots action, but keep in mind that communities are targeted because of their socioeconomic status and their color. So those are the people trying to hold down three part-time jobs, you know, to feed their families, and they don't have a lot of time, nor do they have a lot of money. So, yes, the heroes of the environmental justice movement are women, typically mothers and grandmothers of color, who are worried about their children. But keep in mind, these folks don't have either the economic or the social resources that much of the rest of the country has. So they really deserve a tribute for beginning this movement all over the country. So yes, there is activity, but not enough.
Mm-hmm.
All of us have to become involved. That's my line. We shouldn't just be blaming industry or blaming industry producers. The main problem is the typical U.S. citizen. We've taken to democracy as a spectator sport. It's not a spectator sport. We should be concerned that the Constitution is interpreted and benefiting all people, not just rich people, and we haven't done that. You know, there are going to be polluters arising anywhere, anytime, in any country. The difference is whether in a democracy the people say, this is not right, this is unfair. So I think all of us need to take action against environmental injustice because we all benefit it. We benefit when harm is imposed on poor or minority communities.
And we finally became aware of that in a fairly dramatic way in Flint, Michigan. How many Flints are there?
I would say most major cities in the United States have lead problems. And they have lead in the soil from past pollution, something you should think about when you think of urban gardens. because the lead is in the fruits and vegetables. But most cities have comparable problems with lead, because if it's a matter of using money to help make people safe, and if the threats aren't immediate and obvious, you know, people sort of dropping dead on the streets, the government can continue to deny the problem. So Flint is very, 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 very typical. And you know, environmental injustice occurs in places where you wouldn't even where you wouldn't expect it. I was just out lecturing in Colorado, tiny town in Colorado. You know, one main street, and that little town in Colorado was in the 30% worst polluted counties in the entire United States. And again, we don't think of Colorado as highly polluted. We think of it as pristine.
Right.
So this is everybody's problem.
And tell me more, Dr. Schrader-Frechette, about the sources of the pollution.
Okay, there are many, many, many sources of pollution, but by far the greatest threats come from fossil fuels. So that means if people are concerned about climate change, they also should be concerned about the fossil fuels that cause our deaths. And actually, far more people are killed by fossil fuel pollutants than are killed by climate change. And yet, notice, we're beginning to stop climate change, but we haven't heard very much about the hazards of the fossil fuel pollutants. Let me just give you some quick statistics.
Sure.
The World Health Organization says that about 150,000 people die each year from climate change. That's as a result of things like droughts and therefore famines or flooding or typhoons or whatever. The same World Health Organization points out that more than 4 or 5 times as many people, 700,000 people a year, die from air pollution, almost all of which is from fossil fuels. So the pollution problem, which is an air pollution problem, an environmental justice problem, is a good, you know, 5 times worse in terms of numbers of deaths than is climate change. And yet you don't hear about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I want everybody out there to realize that we contribute to this problem. The richer you are, the more you consume. The 10% richest people in the world cause 25 times more air pollution deaths and climate deaths than the bottom 10%. So the more money you have, the more energy you consume, the more dirty energy you consume, and therefore the more people you hurt.
We welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is Dr. Kristen Schrader-Frechette. She was in Milwaukee recently, speaking at Marquette University as part of the Distinguished Peacemaker Series. She is, she's done all kinds of things. She's at the University of Notre Dame right now, where she directs the Center for Environmental Justice and Children's Health. She's been at the University of California and at Florida. She's written many, many books on this and has traveled and spoken to organizations all over the world, including the UN and the World Health Organization. We're looking at environmental racism this hour of the program, and when she was at Marquette, she cited the fact that Milwaukee County was in the 10% of the most carcinogenic counties in the entire country. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. People who live, work, and play in America's most polluted environments are commonly people of color and the poor. And there are all kinds of reasons for that: the toxicity of landfills, dirty industrial plants, truck depots, and other things have made a disparity, a racial disparity here in terms of health consequences, and they are quite serious. We welcome your phone calls, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. We start with Dan in Chicago. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, good, good, thank you.
Go right ahead, Dan.
Oh, I was wondering why nobody was speaking of the subject of all the radioactive poisoning that's going on in this country from various sources of nuclear power plants, nuclear waste dumps, you know, about what's going on in Japan with the three meltdowns still happening.
Yeah, good point, Dan. Good, you're exactly right. This is Kristen from Notre Dame. Really good question, Dan. Let me make a couple of points. First of all, the radioactive pollution in the United States and elsewhere has become so extreme that we've had to change allowable levels of radiation. In other words, we've made pollution standards weaker in order to cope with what's going on in the United States. And keep in mind also, secondly, that at least 3% of our 600,000 cancer deaths a year are caused by natural background radiation. There is no safe dose of ionizing radiation. All of it's carcinogenic, mutagenic, etc. So to allow this weakening of radiation standards is very, very problematic. Moreover, as a Chicagoan, you should be concerned because studies in every developed nation of the world show that around nuclear power plants, there are higher incidences of cancer. And that's because nuclear plants are allowed to release ionizing radiation, and there is no safe dose of it. So particularly the cancers are a problem for the little folks who often get leukemia. So, yeah, radiation is a very, very serious problem. I've been in Fukushima a couple of times to talk to the folks about what's going on. They weaken radiation standards by a factor of 50 so that they could save cleanup money. And they're going to pay in terms of cancer, future cancers. They already are.
So would you like to see us get rid of nuclear power? And if so, how do we get our energy?
Okay, well, let me say something about nuclear power. First of all, only 19% of our electricity overall is supplied by nuclear fission. Secondly, nuclear fission exists not because industry thought it was a good idea. All the top nuclear interests, like GE and Westinghouse, refused to go into nuclear generation of electricity because they said it was too dangerous. The U.S. government induced them to go into nuclear generation of electricity during the Cold War because the same technology that's used to produce energy is also used to produce weapons. So that's the main reason we went into a dirty, expensive technology. We had a military excuse. If you look at my book, Nuclear Power and Public Policy, I trace the congressional hearings at which all the things I'm saying can be documented. So nuclear is not really cheap. When you count the total cost of nuclear electricity and you include the subsidies, nuclear is over $1.25 a kilowatt hour. Wind is as low as 4 cents a kilowatt hour. Why doesn't the public know this? The public doesn't know this because of all the U.S. research monies and subsidies spent for solar, wind, and nuclear power. 96% of those federal monies have gone to nuclear. 4% have gone to solar and wind. So most people don't know that without subsidies, there would never have been nuclear power. Doesn't operate on the market. There's no country in the world in which nuclear plants operate on the market.
You mentioned earlier that we used to be at the forefront of solar and wind. What would it take for us to rely on solar and wind as a main source of power, and what would it take for us to be at the forefront again in the world?
Well, actually, that would not be a problem. Lots of studies from our own federal government have shown us that we have more than five times the amount of solar energy that we need. The same is true for wind to supply the entire country. Most of the wind is along the coast, And that's precisely where our populations are. The main reason that we're not using clean energy, and this was pointed out by government researchers way back in the 1970s, the main reason we're not using clean energy is that we spent most of our government subsidies on 19th century technologies, and the rest of the world, much of the rest of the world, has spent its subsidy money on clean future technologies. So even without massive subsidies, solar and wind are still cheaper right now than nuclear when you count all the costs. That's why we have only about 100 nuclear plants, and in the year we were supposed to have, by the year 2000, 1,000 nuclear plants. It's because even Wall Street says they're not cost effective. If you look at credit ratings and any credit rating agency's report, you'll see Wall Street is dead set against nukes. Doesn't want to loan the nuclear industry money because it's an expensive, dirty, dangerous technology. That's why the government has to subsidize it.
Mm-hmm. So what would it take, and do you see us moving forward at rapid
speed?
Oh,
we're definitely moving forward, yeah. If we realigned our subsidies and particularly forced people to move into clean technology, we could be there just by 2050. We could easily be completely wind and solar. And that's already happening. There are states in this nation like Iowa that are already more than a third of their electricity supplied by wind. That's pretty astounding. See, folks don't know that. And it's cheap. Even the big, dirty energy companies are moving into wind and solar because they know it's the technology of the future. There is no future in creating toxic million-year lived waste.
Mm-hmm.
even the nuclear folks admit that clean technology is the future. So it's kind of silly to waste our time subsidizing old technology.
Dan, thank you so much for your call from Chicago. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Environmental racism is what we're talking about this hour of the show. Lynn on Facebook writes this for you, Dr. Schrader-Frechette. This is happening in Wisconsin today, mining in northern Wisconsin, where Native Americans live, hog farming on an estuary on Lake Superior, milk source sucking water and spreading and spraying manure in Wood, Washera, and Adams counties, which are all very poor and not heavily populated. These
right.
companies come in, pollute the water with nitrates, E. coli, and suck the wells dry.
Right. And the nitrates also cause birth defects, so I'd be interested to know if there was an increase in birth defects. Yeah, all this is happening, and perhaps one of the most important messages that listeners need to know is that environmental injustice is not economical. It only seems economical to the polluters because people do not count the health cost that the victims bear. And so in virtually any instance, the American Public Health Association has said it is cheaper to control and to prevent pollution than to clean up afterwards. And so the people who say, oh, we can't afford to let people breathe clean air and drink clean water, the truth is, we can't afford not to, and I can give you lots of examples of that point, lots of examples.
And what about tracing the health effects? Are we good at finding out what the health effects actually are? Is somebody doing that on a real thorough kind of basis?
Well, here's the problem. There are two big problems with that. One reason we aren't doing that is that environmental health monies are being reduced. And those are the monies that go to the EPA, the NIH, and the National Science Foundation. So in constant dollars, funding monies for environmental health and pollution problems are going down as the problems increase. And one reason that's so devastating is that polluters spend $100 to try to convince the public that their pollutants and their products are safe for every $1 that the federal government spends. So the federal government is outspent by polluters. That's why people don't know what's going on. So if you want to stop environmental racism, there has to be more public funding. imagine how much of the truth you would know if you heard 100 times more information from one side rather than the other.
And they're spending that $100 to one on what?
To try to produce studies, just as the tobacco industry did, to try to produce studies saying that, say, cigarettes aren't harmful. Or let me give you another example. A couple of years ago, three of our very top university med schools at University of California, San Francisco, Mount Sinai, and Columbia, they all did studies that showed that allowable U.S. pesticide levels, which are far weaker than they are in Europe, allowable U.S. pesticide levels from just one type of pesticides, organophosphates, caused many United States children to lose 5 IQ points by age 7. So what happened? Monsanto spent millions of dollars and proceeded to produce a study saying that the pesticides were not harmful. So that's absolutely typical. Academic scientists or government scientists show all the problems, and then the polluters outspend them by 100 to 1. That's why if you hear somebody say, we have too much regulation, we're funding federal agencies too much, they're exactly wrong. That's the only way we're going to get some truth about pollution and who it hurts.
Tom is our next caller in Iowa. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I just have a bit of a problem with cause and effect of where people of color live. I understand that money speaks much louder than votes, but people live in cities. That's where work is, and I'm a little afraid of the guest assuming that everything is on purpose for
certain communities. Let me stop you right there. I didn't assume that everything's on purpose, but if your interest is the bottom line, you want to locate in an area where people aren't going to give you trouble. That's where big multinational, heavily polluting corporations, they do not go to Ann Arbor, Michigan, or Cambridge, Mass., or Berkeley, California. They don't, because they know there are too many people there who know what's going on and will fight them. So it's a matter of dollars and cents. You reduce your industry cost by locating in an area where people aren't going to give you problems. Are there some exceptions? Yeah, there's some exceptions. But statistically, the industries locate, if they're heavy polluters, where they're not going to have problems and where enforcement is poor.
And I think that the statistics, I refer to this Newsweek current article, in America, the author said, race is the single biggest factor in determining whether you live near a toxic waste site. In mostly white states, it will be the black or Latino neighborhoods that get the oil refineries or the garbage incinerators.
Exactly.
And the federal government denies 95% of civil rights claims against polluters made by communities of color.
Right, right. That's part of the reason that we need stronger federal legislation. We need at least three things to help solve this problem. Number one, we need a Health Tracking Act, which has been voted down for 20 years by Republicans in the federal Congress. We need a Health Tracking Act so that when cases of cancer or autism or something appear in a community, we can see what polluters are nearby. The second thing that we need is recommended by the American Public Health Association. It says that we have the right, the human right, to a livable environment. We no longer live in an era where we have to worry about old King George back in Europe taxing us too much in the colonies. What we need to worry about is big polluters killing us. And so we need a right to a livable environment, a federal implementation of that right. And we thirdly also need to ensure that communities don't have the ability to overrule federal laws simply because they have poor enforcement. And that's what's going on right now.
Thanks, Tom, for the call. Doug in Madison, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
A little background. I work in the renewable gas technology field, and I wanted to mention to you that recently the state of Wisconsin overturned a repeal on nuclear power construction that had been in place for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And this vote was received bipartisan support, and nuclear power has become a real wedge issue in the environmental community. And I'd like for you to speak to that. Recently, James Hansen is coming out to say nuclear is our only hope, and James Lovewell from the Whole Earth Catalog is on the same boat, and it's dividing us as,
right.
as a people. And I thank you for your information on the toxicity of that. Was very informative. But what can we do to get this message out that you're saying and stop this train that almost seems like it's a foregone conclusion that we're going to have nuclear power?
Right.
Well,
first of all, look at the markets. The Atomic Industrial Forum, which is the international lobby group for the atomic industry worldwide, admits that nuclear is a dead industry. And what you have is, you know, the death fights of that industry right now. I hate to talk about my book, but you can find all the statistics on how dirty nuclear it is, and its entire fuel cycle is very, very filthy. It's not a clean technology. That's a lie. Secondly, you can find how expensive it is. Thirdly, you can find how Wall Street has 100% rejected nuclear, which is why the industry has to come to taxpayers for handouts, because the market won't bear it. I'm a huge market proponent. And if you look at market parameters, true market parameters, nuclear is the last technology we should ever choose. Now, you say, why do people like Stuart Brand or Hansen, who are decent people, why do they support nukes? They don't do the research. You know, I've got 4 books on nukes. I do the research. I know the research. They don't. I think they are misled. That's all I can say. They're simply misled. If you have X dollars to spend on energy, you want to spend those dollars in the most cost-effective way possible. You don't want a nuclear plant with a lifetime in the U.S. of 21 years. That's the average lifetime. You don't want a plant that takes, on average, 11 years to construct. You don't want a plant that provides electricity at $1.25 a kilowatt hour once you count the subsidies. You want something like solar and wind. Moreover, if you're interested in military issues, the last thing you want is some huge nuclear target in your community. You want distributed technologies all across the country, like wind and solar, so that nobody can either kill us or shut down our electricity grid because they have committed a terrorist act on a nuclear plant.
What is the status of nuclear power construction in this country? Are there moratoriums now in most states, Kristen, or not?
What has happened in the United States is most states are following Wall Street. Any state that tries to build a nuclear power plant immediately has its state its utility credit rating reduced. If you look at my book, what year is that book? Let me think. It's a 2011 book, and it's called What Will Work? What Will Work? In other words, what will work to solve the energy crisis? Gives all the data on how we have more than enough clean energy. We're the Saudi Arabia of wind. The United States is the Saudi Arabia of wind. It's a very clean technology. And you can find these data in that book, What Will Work. So most people, they're pro-nuke only because they're being pushed by lobbyists.
Thank you, Doug, for your call. We go to Chris in Schulzburg now. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I used to live in Chicago, and I was a construction worker, and we built a trash burner in Robbins, which is a black neighborhood where a lot of people had vegetable gardens.
Exactly.
The contractor was Foster Wheeler Zach, and at the time they promised people in the neighborhood jobs. And then
never
after
happened.
The thing was built, what happened was Foster Wheeler Zach opened up their own temp agency, and so instead of people getting $15 an hour jobs, the temp agency got most of the money.
So. Yeah, that's absolutely typical. Virtually all
people often tout these polluting facilities as providing jobs, but that's not what happens. In I've seen thousands of these cases, study them in detail. What almost always happens is they bring in their own people at the lowest cost possible, and they can truck in people at the lowest cost possible more easily than they can hire local people. And Chicago is a case in point. Chicago has some of the filthiest air in the United States. I did some calculations using the models employed by the Bush administration, which, if anything, understates pollution death. One-third of all Chicago heart attack deaths are caused by particulate matter from fossil fuels.
Really?
Now, that doesn't even count the other 187 air toxins in the air. But just particulate matter alone from fossil fuels causes, including in our cars, right? Just the particulate matter from fossil fuels causes one-third of all heart attack deaths in Chicago. So when somebody wants to tell you, hey, you need to exercise and eat right, maybe, but maybe they ought to take the gunk out of the air. You know, if you think of it, it's not just the gunk goes in your lungs, right, so that you can't breathe and makes it harder for your heart to pump. Those particles also cause it, your brain, and the particles are implicated in Alzheimer's, dementia, autism. So big problems in Chicago.
Yeah,
you know.
And some of that air is coming up to Milwaukee as well, so the number
exactly.
of ozone
exactly.
alerts that we have are substantial. You know, don't go outside
exactly.
if you have problems.
Exactly. There is no safe dose of ozone. There is no safe dose of particulate matter. And I don't want to just be negative about corporations, because there are many good corporations. It's the polluters that give corporations a bad name. But half of all particulate matter and ozone pollution comes from our vehicles. So every single one of us should be saying, why am I contributing to environmental racism by not driving a hybrid or an electric car?
They're too expensive.
Yes, and I always point out to people, you would pay a bit more money, and in return for the cheaper price on your car, you're actually causing a given group of people to become sick, typically little kids and typically people of color. Just to give you an example, UK economists, Stern, et cetera, these are UK government economists, showed that in the developed nations like the U.S., each of us does $1,000 worth of climate damage to the poor of the world, to things like droughts and hurricanes and that sort of thing. We do $5,000 worth of damage to the health of the poor because of our use of fossil fuels. So when you think about it, if you cost out how long you keep a car, what the price is, etc., and the fact that we're doing, each of us, on average, $5,000 worth of damage to the poor of the world because of our personal choices to save money. We're essentially shoving off the cost of our automobile onto poor kids. It's as simple as that.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about environmental racism this hour of the program. Kristen Schrader-Frechette is our guest. She is a professor in the Department of Biological Sciences and the Department of Philosophy at the University of Notre Dame. She directs the Center for Environmental Justice and Children's Health. We've been talking a lot about nuclear power, other subjects as well, but she's written extensively about many of these issues, what will work, fighting climate change with renewable energy, not nuclear power, is the subject of her book, published in 2011. She's written many others. She has been speaking all over the world before the National Academies of Science, the United Nations, the World Health Organization. She was at Marquette University just a little while ago, and she was speaking as part of their Distinguished Peacemaker series. She's our guest this hour. Here's our phone number. Thank you, Chris, for your call. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. You can send an email, talk@WPR.org. You can write on our Facebook page. We like to read your messages. And if you like our page, then you'll know what's coming up for future shows. Always helpful. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. We are on Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of
Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls for Dr. Kristen Schrader-Frechette. We go to John in Milwaukee next. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hi. My question or comment is, you know, here in the United States, we have the EPA and all these government regulations and you know, all these rules that these companies and everybody, you know, all citizens are supposed to meet. And we've just signed this big world clean air policy and EPA, but I and probably most Americans, and I'm going to bet probably 90%, feel that the Americans or America, the country, maybe a little bit Canada and maybe Mexico because they're contiguous with the United States, but we're about the only ones doing anything. I don't really feel like China's stepping up at all. In fact, they're kind of laughing at us. And some of these other third world countries, things like that are too.
Yeah, John, you make some good points. I think most Americans think that. They think our pollution standards are the highest in the world, the best in the world. They're not. Our pollution standards for nuclear power, pesticides, I could go on and on. Statistically, overall, our pollution standards are far weaker than in Western Europe and in Japan. That is one reason, a main reason, that we spend double what other Western nations spend on health care, because as a percentage of our gross domestic product, we spend less than half of what they spend on pollution control. So, number one, our standards are not the best. Western Europe and Japan have the best pollution standards. And number two, because we have so much pollution, that's a major driver of our higher cancer incidence and our lesser lifespan. We're about 40th, 50th from the top in lifespan. And one of the major reasons for that is our heavy pollution. But see, Americans don't know that, because remember what I said earlier, 100 times more dollars are spent by polluters than by the government and trying to tell us what to believe.
It does look, though, particularly bad in China and in India, doesn't it?
Right, right. That's why I said China and India are certainly worse off than the United States. But it's puzzling that the wealthiest nation in the world should have longevity rates that are 40th or 50th
yes, it
from
is.
The top.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's quite puzzling. It's puzzling that we should spend percentage-wise less than half of what other developed nations spend on pollution control. So, see, I think the American public has been sold a bill of goods that we're doing a lot of stuff, but we're really not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do a lot of good things, and I praise our federal agencies, but we're not doing enough. For instance, childhood cancer, which is virtually all environmentally induced. Childhood cancer kills 1,600 to 1,700 children a year, roughly the same number of kids killed by child abuse. Well, which do you hear more about, environmentally induced cancer in children or child abuse? And why is it that we punish people for child abuse, but we don't punish people for pollution child abuse?
Hmm. John, thanks for your call. Willem in Colfax, hi.
Hi. I wanted to add to the list of places where industrial pollution happens is not only in poor communities, in urban areas, which is true, but also in rural areas. The area where I live in western Wisconsin is being dug up for frack sand, which is, on a day like today, very windy, that sand is blowing all over the place, and the DNR doesn't seem to think that's a problem.
All right, I need to hold you there. Your phone is lousy. I'm sorry, Willem, but we heard you. Kristen.
Yeah, Willem is exactly right. Rural communities are impacted because often there are weaker regulations there. Often there aren't as many people around to protect them. And when people talk about dead bodies, a whole lot more people are going to die in an urban area than a rural area. So he's exactly right about targeting some rural areas.
Ray in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. Once again, your guest is fantastic. It reminds me of my way younger days when Rachel Carson first started out, and this individual that you have on now is taking it even further. I have to compliment you on that. Also, I want to bring up about the minority issue, about a lot of your larger corporations that do spraying and larger farms that are non-organic hire people that aren't from this country to do these horrific spraying and all these pesticide things.
Exactly.
And also I want to bring up about nuclear power. You're right. It's totally subsidized from the time that it comes out of the ground to the processing, to start to run, to the byproduct of plutonium for the arms race. It was taxed so many times, it
right.
had to be subsidized.
Right.
And when the arms
right.
race was over with, you have these spent fuel rods. What do you do with them? There is a difference between fission and fusion. I wouldn't support any one of them. But back to the minority issue, on the Shiprock issue on the Four Corner State, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, and Utah, you know, there was a lot of Native Americans that worked in those uranium mines, and
exactly.
they are suffering to this day from
exactly.
the exposure and
exactly.
the non-scientific facts that weren't shown to them at that time.
Exactly.
I'll take your
exactly.
comment off there. And if
Thanks,
I'm wrong
Ray.
On any of this, please correct me.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah. No, I think you're right on all of it, and the situation may be even worse than you say, because the nuclear industry is essentially the only catastrophic industry that's not required by law to be subject to citizen suits, even for deliberate safety violations. There's something called the Price-Anderson Act, according to which industry liability for even intentional safety violations is less than 1% of the cost of a worst-case accident. So if a nuke blows and we're hurt, you still owe your mortgage, even though your house is destroyed, and you can't sue and get anything. Big, 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 big problem.
And
so if nuclear were cost-effective, the government wouldn't have to protect the industry from liability claims. The truth is, nuclear accident insurance could be had, but it would quintuple the cost of nuclear electricity. So instead of letting nuclear operate on the market, instead we subsidize nuclear and then say, you're not liable.
We go to John.
Situation.
About a minute left. Hi, John in Green Bay.
Hi, I'm a physician in Green Bay, and we have a controversy over these wind turbines. Is the professor aware of health effects to people that live near wind turbines?
That's not an area in which I do research, but I can point you to a National Academy of Sciences study. I call them the Supreme Court of Science. And the National Academy of Sciences classic study says that of all available technologies, the most benevolent, pollution-free, and least harmful is wind. Mm-hmm. And I stand by that. Wind is cheap. All around the Great Lakes we've got it. On the coast we've got it. And we've got a whole swath of it throughout the farm belt of the Midwest, which I think could help small farmers stay afloat if they lease some of their land for turbines. So I just refer you to the National Academy report. It was a couple of years ago.
And thank you so much, John, for your call. Kristen, thank you for the hour. Thank you. It was very, very informative. Our guest this hour, Dr. Kristen Schrader-Frechette. She spoke at Marquette University recently as part of the Distinguished Peacemaker series. She has a very, very interesting background. She is a professor of, she has two affiliations here. She is professor in the Department of Biological Sciences and in the Department of Philosophy at the University of Notre Dame. She directs the Center for Environmental Justice and Children's Health. She became only the third American to win the World Technology Award in Ethics a couple years ago. She's won many other awards and is the author of 17 books, monographs, lots of books on nuclear power, including most recently, What Will Work? Fighting Climate Change with Renewable Energy, Not Nuclear Power. Coming up, please join us. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the hour and for on-air production here in downtown Milwaukee. Coming up, the $100 million plan sending probes to the nearest star. Two very noted astrophysicists will be joining us to talk about how they are going to do that. That's after the news.